Morning, everybody. I want to just bring up two little points that I didn't manage to get in last week. Last week, we were talking about making noise. We said two things. First of all, you can't make rhythmic noise or play music on Shabbos, Shemini, Bat, and Kadesh. Therefore, we said banging and tapping, if it's done in a rhythmic fashion, it's asur. We did bring that there are those who are matir it. And then there's a second issue of allowing noise to emanate from your equipment and from your home, which would lead people to the conclusion that you are activating and working these equipment and noise makers on Shabbos, and therefore it's only mutter to use things which people understand are set before Shabbos. So the example brought in halacha is to load a water mill on Erev Shabbos, and the water mill is going to continue grinding the flour through into Shabbos will be asur, because it's considered afshin milsa, it makes a noise. Whereas to have a grandfather clock chime every hour is mutter, because people know that grandfather clocks are usually wound in advance, and that's probably what you did. And therefore, I want to bring two other halachas that are related to noise. One is, if you have a kettle that whistles, so this essentially is nothing, an issue on Shabbos, because on Shabbos you cannot boil water, but on Yom Tov you're allowed to boil water. So can you use such a kettle on Shabbos? So this is not considered a noise maker, and it's not considered that you're making rhythmic noise, and therefore from that issue there's no problem with whistles when it is done on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, sorry. However, there's a problem of making a noise coming out of your house. Your neighbor's going to hear this whistling and say, "Oh, he's using whistling machine." Well, the halacha would say is that if these are considered common utensils, and people know that you weren't activating a whistling machine, you were cooking water, and a whistle came out of it, so they're not going to suspect you that you've gone and you've activated a whistling, then it would be mutter. I don't know how relevant it is today, and the people who have whistling kettles today, it's pretty much gone out of fashion with all other equipment available for heating water, but at least we'll bring it up to round out what we were discussing. Another halacha that he brings there, that the Shemir Shabbos Kachosafim down with our big noise makers, is the use of a keyring that answers to your whistle. Obviously would be asur, meaning those type of keyrings that when you whistle with it, it answers back and makes a noise, so that would be also to use on Shabbos. Now to move on, not yet to the topic that we mentioned about Star Shabbos, we'll get to that, there's just a little section before that he talks about, is the use of a carriage, a pram, pushchair, whatever you want to call it, agalat yinadim. Is it mutter or not to use such a thing on Shabbos? The answer is that it's mutter to use such a thing on Shabbos, but you have to watch out for side issues. So we've discussed in the discussion of oil that attaching various attachments, if they're done on a permanent basis and left to stay on for the season or for a longer period, would be asur, but if it's something that comes on and off, would be mutter. So you have like the front bar on the front of the stroller that needs to come off to let the child in and out. So obviously, unclick it and put it back in, it's not a problem. We've spoken previously about whether you can extend the hood. If the hood was on from before Shabbos, you're allowed to open up the hood. Now we're talking about something else that's coming up, and that is, what about pushing a stroller over an area that is not paved? The minor minor. If you're pushing your stroller over an area that's not paved, the wheels are going to leave a groove in the ground. Is that considered as plowing? They're going to say, no, this is not considered as plowing. It is mutter to push your stroller even over a surface that is not paved. And you can even take a corner, and you're not worried that when you take the corner, you're going to be pushing the soil, the sand, the earth to the side. And now you're really making yourself, no, that's not a problem. You just go the regular way, and you can push your stroller on Shabbos, even on a non-paved surface. What would be asur in pushing a stroller is that it's considered carrying, and therefore, if there's no eruv, a stroller out on Shabbos. To change a stroller from various stages depends really on how it's done. If it's done, for example, you put a bassinet, or what they call the Israelis call an ambatya, trying to call it a bar, But you put a bassinet into a stroller to change it from a newborn to a newborn, or you take the bassinet out of the seat and you change your back. So today they're all chick-chack, click-clack. The easier it is, the better they sell, the more popular they are, and there's no problem involved. It's referring more to the older fashioned ones where a piece has to be screwed in or screwed out. So then it depends on whether it's considered as something you do regularly or something you don't do regularly. So if it's something that you change, you know, the child grows up and now you change it from a bassinet to a regular seat. So then if it clicks or folds or you just release a catch, then it will be more. But if you had to undo a certain piece and put in another piece with a screw, that would be awesome. We'll see later on, sometimes screwing will be mutter, but in this particular case, it's more on a permanent basis. You do it once in a while, and it's not made to change every 5 minutes. Not like folding the stroller. If you fold it open, fold the stroller, claim you're in the bus, you've got to fold it. That's absolutely not a problem. But here, when it's changing its format, that will be a problem unless it just clicks into place, which most of the modern ones do. But one should know that if it has to be done with screws, then it would be awesome and chaps. If a stroller breaks, a wheel falls off, or the rubber around the wheel falls off, the wheel without the tire, or something like that, or some piece disconnected, a rivet fell out, or something like that, and now it's unstable. So, first of all, obviously you can't fix it on Chavis, because this is not something that it's normal use, it's open and closing. This would be fixed, and it would be from a ticket money. So you can't fix it on Chavis. The question is whether you can use it on Chavis in its broken state. And we say that it depends on how easy it is to fix. The easier it is to fix, the more awesome it is, meaning like this, that if it's so easy to repair, and we worry that if you let a person use it on Chavis, he will come to repair it. If it needs to be handed in to a repairman, to a professional to be fixed, and therefore, if a person uses it, you're never going to worry that he's going to forget a Chavis and bend down and repair it, because it's something that he cannot do and he has to bring to a professional. So therefore, bottom line is, if your stroller breaks in Chavis, and now is in need of repair, if it's an easy repair, it's something that you can do yourself, but it's also to do on Chavis, then you may not use the stroller, and in fact we consider it mukta. If it's something that is more difficult and needs more professional to repair, so then we'll say that the stroller is not mukta. If it's broken, it can't be used, but it doesn't mean that it is mukta, or you have to take everything out of it, put it away or whatever. A squeaking wheel or joint may not be oiled with chaps. Those are some halachas to do with strollers and baby carriage. Now we're going to Schar Shabbos. Chazal asked it to receive payment for work that was done on Shabbos. You may not hire yourself out or hire someone and then get paid for the work that you've done on Shabbos. It is considered as an extension of doing business, and doing business in and of itself is not one of the malachas of Shabbos. It's a gzeirah of Shema Yichta that you might come to write down. But it's more than just a gzeirah. It is a certain sense of Shabbos has to be you have to have a certain mood and a certain ambiance in the house on Shabbos, called Shvisa Shabbos. In fact, I once heard from Rav Berkowitz, some sofer that discusses the Shem the Ramban, that it could even be a mitzvah d'oraisa, Indian, and that's a nice thing. It could be that it's the main thing on Shabbos. Therefore, he says that when being the car of a person and you want to encourage them to keep Shabbos, you first teach them the things that create an atmosphere. So it's later you teach the malachas. You don't start with the malachas. This is also this. You can't do this. Because then it looks very restrictive. Rather, the way you tell a person is you tell them that Shabbos has to be different. Shabbos, you have to turn off your phone. You have to turn off your internet. You have to turn off your television. Shabbos, you don't talk the same way you talk during the week. Shabbos, you don't walk the same way you walk during the week. You act differently. You dress differently. You eat differently. It brought down malachas that your meal times on Shabbos should be different than your meal times during the week show that they're different. And therefore, the atmosphere, according to some, is part of the daraisa of creating Shabbos. And when Ezra HaSofer came from Babel back to Eretz Yisrael, the time of building the Bais Sheni, he found that people had their shops open on Shabbos and there was no atmosphere of Shabbos around them. The first thing he did was he ushered opening shops on Shabbos, even though there's no Issa daraisa involved. They weren't writing and just exchanging goods. And handling, even if you're not handling money, it's still exchanging goods. What's the problem with that? and therefore he made it zera that just, this is not what you do on Shabbos because it ruins the Shabbos atmosphere. So one of the extensions, this idea of mekach and memkach being business on Shabbos, is not to receive payment for anything on Shabbos and not to pay for something on Shabbos, as in work. So we'll discuss now the profit of the halacha. It is all part of the idea of not hiring yourself out or hiring someone. It's not just that you the actual employment was contracted on Shabbos, even if it was contracted before Shabbos, if it was done for the sake for during the time of Shabbos, and even if no reimbursement, no payment was made on Shabbos, but after Shabbos or before Shabbos, for that matter, paid in advance, it also does not make it mutter. It still remains also to be employed and paid for the work that was done on Shabbos. We'll see soon how there are ways of getting around this. The Isur is really on the one who receives the money, but the person who gives the money for the employment is also mitah. You're not allowed to put a stumbling block in front of a blind man, which we learn is any time that a person extends a help to someone else, where the help that he's extending is an avera, so he is now a party to the avera. So we talk about you can't give someone food that is treif and ask him to eat it, because that is lifneiver. So to hire someone on Shabbos, even though you're not being the one who's receiving the money for it, nevertheless, you over lifneiver, therefore we're going to say that it's also on the employer and on the employee. The Spar Shabbos that we deal with, that's also is any remuneration, any reimbursement that is done for employment, and it doesn't have to be particular monetary or cash. It could be anything else. It could be that a gift was given, or not that, sorry, it's not called a gift, it's called an item was given, or something of value. Even if there was a switch that you work for me an hour and I work for you an hour, that also is considered Spar Shabbos. Even though I say, you work for me on Shabbos for an hour and I work for you on Monday for an hour. So when I work on Monday for you, that is payment for your work on Shabbos. That is also. However, if I give you an item, I give you a piece of food, or you go to the pharmacy and you pick up medicine and you didn't pay for it, and then to Shabbos you come back and you pay for it, that is not considered Spar Shabbos. That's, you're not paying for employment or work that was done. That is payment that is made for a article that you have received and owe payment for. As we've said earlier, in the case of medical necessity, if a person needs medication, you can go to a pharmacy and ask for the medication on credit and then come back and wait to Shabbos and pay for it, because you're allowed to pick up things that are needed for Shabbos. So there's even discussion of going to a store and picking up food. It will be permissible, even if it means that Moshe Shabbos can have to pay for it. It looks like business. So here you're receiving something that you need for Shabbos, and after Shabbos you pay for it. So this is not considered as employment. What we discuss in Schar Shabbos is payment for employment, where a person is doing something on Shabbos and gets paid for it. And obviously, what he's doing on Shabbos is not that we're talking about the person that's work, he's building a building, which is awesome. That for sure is awesome to hire a person such a thing. But even if you're doing something that's more, you ask him to babysitting usually does not require one to do any melachos melech Shabbos. There's a lot of work involved with melech Shabbos, and therefore that would be something that is employment that is permitted to, that is work that's permitted to do on Shabbos, but you can't be employed for it. So one of the examples brought in halacha is echaz. Someone who's paid to be a chazan is being employed on Shabbos to do something which is permitted. He's allowed to sing and daven on Shabbos. Interesting. Also, if a person has a standing debt and now he does work for his friend, and as a result the friend cancels the debt, that's also considered remuneration for work that was done and would be also from the idea of Schar Shabbos. Canceling a debt on its, well, let's say, say this beforehand. Something which cannot be claimed in a court of law, based in or any other court, in other words, it has no monetary value in the form that it cannot be claimed, would not constitute Schar Shabbos. So if if a person does me a favor and he washes my dishes in a way that's permissible on Shabbos, I have a full of dishes next morning, and someone offers me, one of my guests or whatever, offers to wash my dishes, and I'm so attached by it that I decide to give them a gift. The giving of a gift is not considered payment for the work, because there wasn't a relationship of employment that was over here, and the gift was not an expected form. It's not like the person who washed the dishes can then go to Facebook and say, hey, I washed this guy's dishes, he now owes me payment for my work, because you offered as a favor to wash the dishes, and I felt indebted, and therefore I gave you a gift to show my appreciation. But it's not that there was a work agreement that you're going to do the dishes, and I will find a way of paying you for your efforts, and instead of giving you cash, I gave you a bar of chocolates. That's not what we're talking about. Where the gift was out, not as owed, but as generosity. So similarly, if you do each other favors, you have a neighbor and you say, listen, I'd like to go to shul for Shachris. Could you watch my kids? And he says, sure. But I'd like to go to shul for Musas. Can you watch my kids then? So that again is also not considered as payment. Well, I work for an hour. We said that if I say, tell a workman or say a security guard or a babysitter or something like that, please babysit my children on Shabbos so that I will babysit your children on Monday. That, we said, is a problem of Schar Shabbos, because you've made some sort of agreement that the way I pay you is by giving the same thing back. You gave me an hour's work, I will give you an hour's work. Here, this is a favor that is done where it's not really that you owe me one. Yes, sometimes you feel gratitude and you feel indebted, but it's not a monetary claim that you go to court. You tell your neighbor, could you please watch my kids for Shabbos? And she says, well, watch my kids for Musaf, and you don't do it. Excuse me, then she takes it to basin and says, well, you owe me an hour base. The basin will be sad on your behalf, but not that they get to be able to claim anything or make a judgment on it. So when it's done as a favor, so even though you return a favor, that is not considered as Schar Shabbos. So too, as we brought down in Shul Chaim Kanievsky, that if someone owes you money and you cancel the debt, just for the sake of canceling the debt, not because, as I said, you owe someone money and therefore you work, and therefore he says, I'm canceling the debt. You just cancel the debt. Canceling your debt is not a problem with Schar Shabbos. Being nice, someone owes you the money and you say, you know, forget about it. That is not Schar Shabbos. So how does this come out? How are we going to practically apply babysitting on Shabbos? And according to this, would come out that someone who does babysitting on Shabbos and on Shabbos only is taka also to do it for any remuneration, whether cash or other. If the babysitting was done for the sake of receiving something in return, then that is proper employment, and that is done only on Shabbos, and will be also to babysit for pay, even if the pay was not cash. The issur of Schar Shabbos is not related to the time of the payment, and therefore, even if the payment is made after Shabbos, it's still considered as money that was earned through Schar Shabbos. Would be asur. One may not receive payment for work whether you were hired by a Jew or by a goy. It's also considered as Schar Shabbos, a person who gets paid for work that he did for a goy. But giving Schar, as we said, receiving Schar Shabbos is the asur. Giving is only lifne'iver. So if you're giving to someone who's not asur, so there is no lifne'iver. Therefore, if you hire a goy to do some work for you on Shabbos, work obviously that's mutter for him to do. You're not hiring to build your house, but you're hiring him to babysit your children or to wash your dishes or like that. So then, that for goy doesn't have an issur Schar Shabbos, and therefore it's mutter to pay him. Therefore, if you have a goy that you have hired for some sort of, what will be another example, is you have a waiter. You're having an event. You need waiters, and the waiters are hired just to work at the meal, and the meal only, which is on Shabbos. So if you have Goyish waiters, that's fine. If you have Yiddish waiters, that's a problem. Now here we're going to discuss the Heterim. And the Heterim are based on the idea that Schar Shabbos, when paid in Behavloa, Behavloa comes from the Lashon Livloa, to swallow, when it is included in a different sum, even if the other sum is the minority, It's a smaller amount than the Schar Shabbos is a major amount, but it is paid as a lump sum. Then when money is paid as a lump sum, then we don't look at it as Schar Shabbos. Therefore, if a person works, for example, you have a catering, you have an event, a simple event, and you hire a caterer, and the caterer hires waiters. The waiters have to come in before Shabbos to set up the tables, and then on Shabbos they're going to do whatever they need to do over the whole Shabbos. But they did spend some time before Shabbos setting up. Then when you pay them, you pay them for the whole event. You don't pay them for Friday and a separate amount for Shabbos. You pay them for the whole event, then that is considered, so even though they might have worked, who knows, 6 hours over Shabbos, you know, 3 hours at each meal, and only half an hour on Erev Shabbos, but nevertheless, you pay a lump sum. A lump sum is mutar to pay. And that would be the etzer if a person, in fact, is hiring someone to do something on Shabbos that included in his need, included in his employment, is that it should start before Shabbos or end after Shabbos or do something during the week that would, but it's got to be something related to this work. So, for example, the caterers, if they set up the table before Shabbos or they clean up the hall after Shabbos or something like that, then when you're paying them, you're paying with a lump sum and it would be permitted to do such a thing. yes, if you had different work. We said that if a person does work on Shabbos and continues or it starts during the week or it includes hours that it does during the week, so then you pay a lump sum that's included. For example, if you have a tutor, you have your child needs tutoring, or you want them to have tutoring, extra lessons, whatever you want to call it, and the tutor learns with him on Shabbos afternoon, but he also learns with him on Sundays. So since he learns with him on Shabbos, he learns with him on Sundays, so you pay him at the end of the week for both sessions together as a lump sum that will be considered mutter. But I'm not going to give the guidelines here. I don't have it clear. I thought I saw it and I'm not so clear about it. So to continue on other things, and anyway, I have a lot to continue for next week, so we'll come back to it. So we were talking about doing on Shabbos and after Shabbos. Now there's something else. Someone who works on an hourly basis. So you have to know how do you reckon out his payment paid as a lump sum. You have an employee who gets a weekly wage, and he has to fill in a timesheet. So he fills in, this week I did 40 hours, this week I did 39, this week 41, whatever it is, and he gets paid on an hourly basis. So his pay is related to how many hours of work he did that week. But he gets a lump sum for what he does, because this is considered he is a worker who works on a weekly basis. So lo yutzur, some of those hours were on Shabbos, and now he comes at the end of the week and he gives you a timesheet where he's done his 40 hours for the week. So you don't say, well, this is you're paying per hour, and each hour is a separate session, and therefore this is not a lump sum. This is you're paying him for each hour, and there are 2 hours that were done on Shabbos, and therefore those 2 hours you can't pay. Now, there, even though the reckoning, the cheshbon that you make, the calculation, is based on an hourly tariff, but it's considered one big employment, and therefore you can consider it as a lump sum. But if you have someone whose employment is not on a fixed basis, when you come, you pay, you don't come, you don't get paid. And every time, it's a cheshbon on itself, it's just you don't feel like paying him at the end of each employment session. You say, come at the end of the week or the end of the month, and tell me which days you worked and which you didn't, which ones. Then it's not a fixed, therefore, then you look at it as each time is a separate employment session, let's call it that. And therefore, that will be a problem with Schar Shabbos. Someone who comes in very irregularly, comes in on the Shabbos and doesn't work, so you owe him for the Shabbos. Then he comes in again on a Wednesday. And after Wednesday, he says, pay me for Shabbos and Wednesday, so then you can't pay him for Shabbos because that will be considered as Schar Shabbos. So then when there's a certain kvius, there's a certain, he comes regularly for 2-3 hours a day. So true, sometimes it's 2, sometimes it's 3. That's why you have it set up that his pay is connected to the amount of hours that he puts in. You don't want to pay him more than he worked, but if there's a certain employment status that he's done on a fixed basis, so then you consider it as a lump sum that you're paying him, even though the calculation of the lump sum is based on the hours that he put in. Nevertheless, that will be considered a lump sum. So with that, with the way to hire a babysitter, if you want, if the babysitter needs to be paid, can't find a free babysitter or want to pay the babysitter, whatever the case may be, would be to get the babysitter to do some time. Part of the hiring that you do, then they're going to be watching your kids during the Shabbos meal. It's also watch the kids on Friday afternoon. So Shabbos is part of the deal, and then you pay them a lump sum for everything. And that is also brought down the Gabi Echazen, or Gabi Bar Koira, and things like that. So the halacha brings two, starting on the one hand, there's a Devar Mitzvah. For someone to be a Chazen or to be a Bar Koira, there's a Devar Mitzvah, then Baruch is Far Shabbos. And others say, no, we prefer not to rely on that Heter, and rather the Chazen gets paid for the hours that he uses for preparation. Or the Bar Korah for that matter, there's certain preparation that's involved in his work, and we pay him for his work plus some time of preparation. So if he's then therefore the preparation is done during the week, so then his Bahab role is. Now, even if a person is paid as a lump sum and is paid as a what we call Bahab law that is included in, nevertheless, it doesn't make it mutter to discuss his fee, it doesn't make it mutter to hire him on Shabbos. It has to be that the hiring is done outside of Shabbos hours, and you can't discuss his fee on Shabbos, as we discussed outside of Shabbos. And not only that, even to hire someone to work after Shabbos would be also on Shabbos. In other words, to go over to someone and say, could you babysit tonight at my house? And it's understood that this is babysitting for pay. That is like asking, can you please work for me tonight? Even though that's not the lacha that they're doing, but it's employment, that will be also. So there is a way of getting around that. You need a babysitter on Monday Shabbos, if you look at the Shabbos afternoon, you can ask a potential babysitter, are you available tonight? And not mention babysitting. Or could you come by my house tonight? Even though it is understood between the two of you that the reason why you mentioned that you discussed availability was for potential employment, that would be motivated to say, can you babysit tonight? That will be awesome. You cannot talk directly about the employment, even if the employment is not going to be taking place on Shabbos. Even Shabbos involved will be also on Shabbos. So, following on that, anything which would require work done on Shabbos, and essentially only on Shabbos, the way to do it in order to pay them would be to get to do some other work. If you're hiring, as you mentioned, we gave the typical example we gave, babysitting, cousin, or courier, but more examples would be a waiter or even a security guard. You've got an event happening and you need someone to be around as security guard, as you can hire a goyish security guard and pay for work on Shabbos. But if you have a Jewish security guard that gets paid for it, then again, you have to make sure that some of his work is done outside of Shabbos hours in this form of employment that you're hiring him now. And therefore, when you pay him, you're paying him what's called the Havlo, you're paying him a lump sum, and not Shabbos hours. There's a lot more on the subject for today, so end here for this week, and we'll get back to it and hopefully finish next week. I wish you all a wonderful welcome.